Today's podcast brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/educatingtech. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for whatever device you use. We'll talk more on this later in the show.
So we've been talking the past few weeks about Windows 10's Spring Creators Update. And it looks like that it was a blue screen of death issue that was actually stopping it from rolling out to everybody. And so it's been delayed. But they released, like, I guess the fix, which was like a build number, like one more. Like the build number of the one that was bad was like 17133. And so the one that they started pushing out to insiders to fix the blue screen issue was 17134. So real big change there.
Well, I'm glad they delayed it rather than pushing it out and we'll fix it afterwards, because we've had enough bad updates here of late.
Well, actually, it looks like they might have actually killed it, I mean, to be completely honest with
yeah.
you. At least the name of it, which we have been making fun of the name because it is like real creative, quote unquote, no pun intended, that they're calling their instead they had the Fall Creators Update. Now they were going to do Spring Creators Update. But it looks like it might go live, I think May 8th was the last date that I saw. And it looks like if you go to, and we'll put this link in the show notes, to this one website that starts off with MSN.com, which I haven't been to MSN.com in forever. But it actually is calling it the April update, and the Windows 10 April update, as opposed to the Spring Creators Update. And why are they calling it the April update when it comes out in May? I don't know. And so I don't know how reliable this source is that they're actually going to change the name from Spring Creators Update to April Update.
Yeah, but we also got to remember Microsoft released Server 2012 R2 in 2016.
That's true. That's true. They did do that. But I'm a little bit leery about it coming out May 8th, because that may be testing day, I think, when we start testing again. So I'll have to make sure that I go and like shut down WSUS from pushing that out or something in case we do any testing on Windows machines.
Got a question. Do you do the peer-to-peer updates?
Whatever the default is what it's on.
You got peer-to-peer updates too.
Because I have not... I'm running the Windows education version, Windows 10 education, so I'm not sure, 100% sure, if it's on by default on that, but I don't know. If it starts rolling out, it starts rolling out. Nothing I can do about it at this point.
And I think I'm actually going to end up switching all my license into the education one instead of professional, just so I can get AppLocker back, because thanks, Microsoft, removing AppLocker in the professional.
Yeah, that seems kind of weird, because you would think that like businesses and stuff would want to use that too.
No kidding. It's in the enterprise, but not in professional.
I guess they want like big Fortune 500 companies or whatever to use enterprise, schools to use education, and I guess mom and pop shops to use professional, I guess. So.
Yeah, I get the breakdown. It does save some money, but it is not saving me any time.
But speaking of server stuff, you mentioned 2012 R2. You mentioned a while back about Project Honolulu. And
yes.
Past couple weeks or so ago, I think. I think it came out and we just forgot to talk about it, but they actually released the Windows Admin Center is what they ended up calling it. Mm-hmm. Have you been running it since they did the official release?
I have, and all those little idiosyncrasies that I had with the other one about the page not loading the first time I went to it are gone. Now, it still didn't have any more functionality than it had when we talked about it when it was Project Honolulu, but now that it's released, the frameworks are released for people to write stuff to it too. So I think we're actually going to get System Center Lite with this.
Well, that'd be good.
I'm excited about it.
Well, I know I tried to install it, and I tried to install it on like one of my servers. I think it was my network performance monitoring server, and I ran into like some kind of delegation issues when it came to being able to connect to the other servers, and I was reading through the documentation and it didn't really make any sense to me on why if you install it on a server OS you had to do some stuff with delegation, I think in Active Directory, but if you installed it on a Windows 10 client you didn't have to do any of that stuff. I just found that really weird.
And it has one installer for two different pieces of software is what you were running into.
Yeah.
I don't know why they would bother to do that. I did have it loaded on my personal machine, which I guess is what they're thinking is you're going to run on your local host or whatever.
But if you're going to run it on the local host, why don't you just use the server administrator tool that's already built into Windows 10 with the RSAT tools?
Well, I mean, it does let you... You can still connect to that thing remotely and whatnot. Yeah, I'm really not sure why they did it. I can't make up any excuses for them. It's just bonehead.
Yeah, that's what I ended up doing was I ended up like connecting to the desktop Windows 10 that I can install it on through like my Mac or whatever to be able to try it out just to see. But I have something else that I actually use the Dell server administrator tool that too. I installed it on this desktop that I have in here. As far as my Windows machine to do those sorts of things, because I finally, we talked about a couple weeks ago how I finally installed the Dell tie-ins to ESX and stuff to be able to pull like hardware information about my my ESX host. So that's how I connect to those. And you know, you have to change the password on like your IDRAX because for some reason the default is always Calvin. At least when it comes to Dell, seems like Dell's default password is Calvin for some reason.
It is Calvin, and it is weird, isn't it?
I don't know why that would be, but it's almost like the phone system who the admin account, his name is Sandy.
Oh yeah, Miss Sandy. What was her last name?
I don't know, but
Sandy Simmons.
Yeah,
Sandy Simmons.
The NEC system, the admin account was Sandy. I think it was like the guy who ran the place's mom or something.
That's so. Well, it's a Japanese company, so.
Yeah, and 2 weeks ago, as our last bit of follow-up, I guess, until I just saw that you added something to the document.
We'll do it live.
Do it live. We talked a little bit about the new Gmail that's coming out, and it looks like it's rolling live for personal accounts, and then you can go into your G Suite console and actually enable it for your users to use on your education accounts, too. And it is very pretty. It is just as nice, if not nicer, than what the screenshots didn't do it justice. It's very nice.
They did not. And what's really interesting to me is you can lay it out, and it looks identical to Outlook. I even have, like, I have my side, my left side, I have my folders or labels. Top, I have my emails. The bottom, I have the preview. And on the right, I have my calendar. It's perfect.
It is. And that's the one thing that... They could have done nothing else to it, but when they added in the ability to have your calendar on the same page as your email, that is like, that's game-changing right there when it comes to G Suite stuff, because you don't have to navigate somewhere else.
Only one issue that I've ran across.
What was that?
I don't know how many people are going to run into it, but I actually used it. You remember up there on the top left on the old Gmail, you had that drop down where you could go to contacts?
Yes.
You can't go to contacts anymore anywhere.
Well, I found it.
You can go to contacts.google.com and it works just fine.
Well, if you start like a new message and you click on to, it then brings up like a box for you to pick contacts, and you can pick from your directory and stuff that way too.
See, mine won't load my directory contacts. It'll only load my personal. When I click directory, it closes the window.
That's really weird, because I had no problem accessing my directory, or I don't have any local contacts, but... But I access the directory just fine. So,
well, and we do have to keep in mind of the state of software that I use. So it may just be a problem with some beta chain that I'm on.
Yeah, it could have been like a Chrome problem or something like that.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But also it's new, and it's not like they're rolling it out where it is the new Gmail. To actually access it, you have to like click on your gear icon and hit try the new Gmail. So it's live, but it's probably... Well, I mean, Gmail was in beta for like 15 years.
So, you're right.
I mean, this may be how Gmail's doing like betas now as far as new stuff. It's like they just let you try it. It's beta internally, but they don't like call it beta outwardly.
Yeah. And so, although I'm extremely happy with it, I love it.
It is very nice.
I think I've had about 25 of my users notice it and switch to it and like it.
Well, that's good.
Because they love that the preview pane is not in the labs section anymore.
Yeah.
It's actually just a feature.
Yes, that's good. I mean, that's what the labs feature is for, though. I mean, it's to try things out and find out what people use and like to use and roll them out as actual features in the main product. The only thing
I
want
to
know...
Did you notice, though, that there were no more labs?
I did not notice because, I mean, you know me, I'm a Mac Mail user, so I have a little client. I don't really use the Gmail actual the website or whatever for email, but I did not notice that. But what I also want to know, and I'm actually going to do it live, I'm going to check live. My main thing with Gmail the only thing that's keeping me from using it, and you can't do it, so never mind. I want separate signatures for replying to messages and creating new messages. That is all I want, and I would be happy.
There is one feature that I would give them money for if they would do this. I want a Mappy connection.
Yes, that way you can go back to, like, when you click on the little things, like you're scanning things like you talked about before.
I will gladly pay for it, Google, at this point.
That would be handy. Very handy. So tell me a little bit about what's happening to Chrome OS.
It's growing up. I mean, our little baby OS has grown so much over the past year.
I mean, just adding Android apps is a big thing.
Oh, it was huge.
And then when you can run Office on a Chromebook, that's a yep. major thing.
You can run the Android version of Office, but what they're doing is, they tested it with the Android apps using containers and whatnot, but they're actually enabling full container support now. And in fact, on mine, I even have the container command, which they got real creative, and it's just the command C, because apparently container's too long to type.
Okay, so for non-developers like me, what do you actually mean when you say container?
So a container is, think of it as a sandboxed application. It's a way of fencing the application completely off while utilizing the existing kernel.
Oh, that's fancy.
So you get to run a separate application in user space that has no access to your other user files, but use the same kernel, so there's no performance detriment.
That almost sounds like what macOS was trying to accomplish with the Mac App Store when they started introducing their sandboxing.
Well, it does. Theirs are a traditional sandbox where it's just kind of a fence around it. This one is, think of more of a Docker container with this.
I got you.
They're not holding anything out about it. I mean, they've already released information about it. There was a community project called Crouton that would allow you to enter and put your Chromebook in developer mode and install like an Ubuntu desktop and whatnot and use the native Linux underneath. But you had to be in developer mode.
Yeah.
Well, they took along the same path, but not having to put a developer mode on there. Theirs is called Crostini, which kind of funny. It's another kind of bread. Crouton, Crostini, haha. Because, you know, we like funny names.
Yes.
But, like Oreo. Yeah, this is going to open it up for native Linux applications to run. And Google's going the GTK route, which is the GNOME toolkit.
Mm-hmm.
And they've created their own, well, they forked a community's material design theme and made it match up a little more with the Chromebooks. So they even have a GTK toolset theme that's going to make the Linux applications look material like they belong.
Well, that'll be good, because that's gonna open up even more that the Chromebook's gonna be able to do.
I mean, it's gonna be the most powerful platform at that point, which is kind of tough to say. I mean, we're gonna go from being a useless platform 2 years ago to do any real work on to this year. We got Android apps, so it'll let us to do a lot of stuff. To next year, and maybe hopefully this year, we'll have full on out Linux application support.
Well, I hear people say that an operating system or a platform is not fully, mature. Is that the word we're looking for? Mature until you can actually develop for that platform on the platform itself.
And correct. And that's actually what sparked this whole project at Google, is they wanted Android Developer Studio to run on Chromebooks.
And so, I mean, that's essentially what's going to happen, is you're going to be able to develop for a Chromebook on a Chromebook. And so, I mean, it's really going to be, I mean, that's in some ways, that's more powerful than iOS, because you can't really develop for iOS on iOS yet. But,
well, I mean, it's going to be really cool, because they're going to be using KVM for the virtualization side. So some more details have kind of leaked about it. There's going to be a KVM virtual machine that runs the containers. So there's going to be, not only the containers keeping separation, there's actually going to be a separate virtual machine that they're running in.
So is this going to be like everything else that Google says about like Chromebooks, where they release something and it just runs on everything? Or is it going to have like some restrictions like the Android apps? Because I just wonder about like how well would this run on like one of these N21s with like 4 gigs of RAM in it doing like virtual stuff.
And I'm really curious to see how it does that, because KVM is a traditional hypervisor, but they said it's going to support ARM also, which KVM does to a certain extent. And I'm wondering if they're actually modifying it to do shared memory instead of actually carving out memory space. But it says May 8th on Google I/O is when we're going to start seeing it. And I am super excited about this because I love Linux. Yeah, I love Linux. I love my Chromebook. I love Android apps. And if I could have it all on this one device that I love carrying around, that's a win-win for me.
I mean, could you see, because I know you still do, getting all these extra features and tool sets on the Chromebook, I know you still run a Windows desktop as far as your, like, main management machine at the school. Could you see Chrome OS, like, taking the place of Windows as far as that aspect of your work, having access to all these types of tools? I mean, if you're going to be able
Absolutely.
To, like, and if you're going to be able to emulate, like, Windows apps eventually on this thing.
Well, and that's one of the things the community's been demonstrating. They've ran Wine and ran Windows apps on Chrome OS with this container application.
I mean, but really, truthfully, I mean, honestly, you could probably do it now as long as you had something you could RDP into.
Yeah, and I pretty much do. But one of the things that's really interesting, though, is, you know, Microsoft has made PowerShell open source, and you've installed PowerShell on your Mac, and I've installed it on Linux systems. So technically, I could do everything for my Chromebook through PowerShell natively.
Yeah, for the most part. So, I mean, yeah. That's
especially being on Hyper-V, I can manage my hypervisors from Chrome OS, which is huge.
Yes, I mean, that's you get you a quick, lightweight, cheap machine to do all your management stuff, and you don't have to worry about taking 4 hours to set up Windows desktops. So.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's really going to have a play into the corporate environment because a lot of companies, including the dreaded ETS, develop native Linux applications for enterprise stuff and education. So, I mean, it's not like it's a new platform for them to develop on. It's just going to work.
And it also seems like maybe Google's doing these things, I mean, not just to make it where you could develop for Chrome, for Android and Chrome on Chrome OS, but it's almost like they're adding all this powerful stuff in there so that eventually they could take the replace of the Windows machines in schools and businesses and stuff. And it's more than just a web browser.
I'm okay with that because I like the Chrome OS UI is simple for everybody to operate. The Chrome OS management tools, while lacking in some areas, have a lot of features and are simple to manage. And if we bring the power of a full Linux environment that we can manage with the Google Admin Console, I mean, that's huge. I mean, we wouldn't need group policy at that point.
Yeah, I mean, the admin console, I mean, it's pretty powerful. I mean, the only thing I'd like to be able to do is have something that's equivalent to, like, the loopback policy where you can make device policies apply to users and user policies apply to devices so that I can push an app to a cart as opposed to a bunch of students.
Yeah, and that would be nice, and maybe we'll get that eventually.
Hopefully.
Because it does make sense.
Yeah, and like I think of apps and printers are the main things that sometimes I'd like to push out to different people and different devices and not necessarily everybody.
I think we're going to have to get that because of them putting Android apps and now Linux apps. Those are much thicker applications to download on the fly anytime some user logs into a random device.
Yes.
That's just going to take too much time.
Yeah. So they're gonna have to make it a little bit more robust. But you know what, Chrome OS? You were mentioning how it's kind of simple. You know what it kind of reminds me of? What is that old Jolly Cloud? I think is what it was called.
Yep.
Jolly OS. It was just like you had like a few buttons. You had a web browser. You had files. You had a camera. You had photos. I mean, that's kind of what Chrome OS reminds me of. It's just something that's simple and user friendly and easy to use and familiar. And so I like the route that they're going. It's like they're adding power underneath it, but on the outward appearance, it's still the simple Chrome that we know and love. And mm-hmm. So I think that's great.
And I appreciate the approach because it can be as simple as you want it to be. By default, it's as simple as you need it to be. But if they get this in there and working right, it can do more powerful things than your servers can.
Yeah. I mean, truthfully, yeah, because, I mean, the internet runs pretty much on Linux servers. I mean,
And heck, iCloud runs on Linux servers.
Yeah, I mean, nobody's really running a bunch of web hosts, except for maybe Microsoft. Nobody's really running their websites on IIS.
Microsoft released a Linux distribution.
Yeah, so, I mean, maybe they're not even doing it either. Maybe everybody knows that IIS is pretty terrible. You know, I only used IIS to do one thing. It was really easy to, like, make redirects with with IIS.
I remember that server there at the old office.
It is Apache. It's like it's just a public web server that all we did was create to make http://domain.com redirect to www.domain.com. That's all we did. That's all it did. So good times.
Oh, that was good.
But speaking of cheap PCs, a couple weeks ago, I found an article from The Verge. They did like this big write-up. Do you remember that $100 PC or laptop that somebody was supposed to be working on? They were working to be able to put in the hands of like every single kid all around the world.
Yeah, and then it ran the Sugar UI, which is part of the Fedora project now.
Yeah, I saw this Verge article, and it kind of like. It kind of reminded me of that project, because apparently it went completely wrong, and it didn't like pan out like the guy wanted to. The device was ugly, it was blocky, nobody really wanted it, but the concept was like, that was like the one-to-one initiative right there, like the start of it. It's like, let's provide a $100 laptop. And then what I think kind of killed it, though, was like the netbooks came around, and they made those like cheap $300 Windows PCs. I had a netbook. I mean, I loved it. I mean, it was small, it was light, it was easy to carry around, get into closets and do things with. And then the tablet apparently came and killed those away. But it's almost like we're going back to that cheap market with the Chromebooks in a way.
Yeah, and I think with the one laptop per child, the OLPC thing, what happened to it is, when did it release? I think it says in this article, hold on, 2007.
Yeah, long time ago.
What also released in 2007?
Probably the iPhone, I think, came out in
2007. It was the original iPhone.
Yeah, the iPhone.
That was when the mobile space changed.
Yeah.
So they were just a little too late. That was when the mobile revolution started.
Yeah.
But that UI, oh my, that UI is awful to use. They were trying to make it to where it didn't matter what language you spoke, you could use it.
Yeah.
But instead, they made it no matter what language you spoke, you couldn't use it.
It had great intentions, and what I think it did ultimately was a good thing. Was it like, it was an eye opening for the market that like schools and countries that aren't as economically advantaged as the United States is, that a device that's low cost and powerful and user friendly is a necessity. And I'm glad that somebody kind of took that ball and ran with it with Chromebooks. I mean, now granted, you can get Chromebooks that cost $1,600. I was looking at Chromeboxes the other day, and I was just like blown away by how much some of those can cost. And I'm like, this is just like a little Intel NUC computer with Chrome OS on it. I mean, why is it costing $1,300? I mean, I don't know.
No lie there.
But I'm glad that project happened. I'm also glad in a way that that's not the way that everybody went, because that device was horrible, but it proved a point that something like that is needed. And it looks like, I mean, we're getting there. Eventually these Chromebooks are going to be $100. I promise you that.
They'll get there. And in fact, you can get them right now. I saw refurbished N23s on sale for $79.
Well, I mean, you might as well buy them up while you can, because I'm going to talk a little bit about that later on, because apparently there are no more N23s.
There are 5,000 left at Southern Computer Warehouse.
Well, I know CDWG told us there are no more left, and they are getting no more.
No, so. They are not.
But yeah, so it was just neat to be reminded of that project, because I remember hearing about it, and I was like, that's a pretty decent idea. Ugly device, but a great idea.
Yeah, and one of the things that was really neat about it is it was meant for those areas that were never going to have electricity or connectivity. There was a hand crank on the side of it to actually charge the battery.
Yeah, that's pretty neat. It's like one of those radios or emergency lights or something.
Crank it for 30 minutes. You can use it for 5.
Yeah, that sounds about right. But in keeping with our talk about Chrome, I wanted to ask you about this too, on how you felt about something like this. Recently, Chrome OS, and well, Chrome, the browser, and I'm assuming Chrome OS too, because I think they roll over some of the features. They started blocking ads, which is really weird considering Google's an ad company, that Chrome is starting to block ads. But, and you know, sometimes, and it happens, a lot of times it happens because, like, something tries to pop up or something, and you get taken to a site, and you see the Chrome blocks it because it thinks it's malicious, right? Have you seen that?
Oh, yeah.
And so it looks like Microsoft is going to build a Chrome extension that essentially does the same thing, but maybe, like, work a little bit better than Chrome. And so I was just wondering if something like that, or if you do anything, I don't know, as far as like pushing out like ad blockers like mandated to your users, or if you would consider, like, because I thought about adding this Chrome extension from Microsoft to our users' Chromes, just because, I mean, what would it hurt to have a little bit more protection?
Oh, not at all. In fact, I do push out AdBlock Plus to every user, but mine was more of a selfish reason. Not just for blocking ads. As soon as I pushed this plugin out, it saved me 30% of my bandwidth.
Yeah, I can believe that. But I mean, have you had any complaints as far as like anything breaking?
Not a single complaint in 3 years.
Well, that's good. I might have to look into this and actually do something like that, because that would be nice to. Because I mean, just a side note to kind of go. It kind of tells the same thing. We had a kid do something a little bit inappropriate on a Chromebook, and so I pulled his internet history for the principal. Yes, we can do that. We can pull your internet history from our filters.
We can see all sorts of things, yeah. Kids, if you're listening.
And so I gave the principal, like, this log, apparently she brought it to the parent, and she was trying to, and I highlighted the parts where they searched for the thing that they weren't supposed to search for and all that. And apparently she printed this thing out, and it ended up being like many, many pages. And I think the parent got upset because they were like, there's no possible way that my kid could go to that many web pages in one day. And this is why they can go to that many pages in that short amount of time, is because, yes, of ad networks. And that report pulled every single, like, banner ad, image ad, whatever, from every single web page and put it on that report. And so yeah, pushing out an ad blocker, that would help a lot with bandwidth, and not only that, but probably clean up those those filter reports a little bit from being so large.
You're right, the only thing that it does get annoying, and I don't blame the content provider, is sometimes you go to a site and it's like, hey, I see you're running an ad block, turn me off. But at the same time, generally those sites will show you how to turn it off because they want to present you the ad, so the user never gets back to me with a problem.
Yeah, I usually just close the tab and never go to those websites again. So,
or sometimes there's a little button at the bottom that you can just click close and go there anyway.
Yeah, I don't think you can go to anything from the Atlantic. Forbes, I don't think you can go to without disabling the ad blocker. And I think there's some other ones. But a lot of them, they're like, hey, ads are how we make money. Please consider whitelisting. And you can just hit close anyway. And so...
But I get it.
But I could see doing it from a bandwidth perspective, because, I mean, have you ever gone to, like, The Verge without an ad blocker on? It's horrible. It's terrible.
There are some sites that, once you have ads on, are completely unusable. I mean, well, besides the stupid layouts they tend to do, like, Windows Central used to be an awesome site to read, but then if you've ever turned off the ad blocker, stuff moves before you can click it. It's crazy.
Yeah, and at least browsers are now starting to do where it won't autoplay the audio from the videos that start playing automatically. So,
yeah, and I really appreciate that feature too.
But and what's really bad, it's like you want to be able to support these people because we like reading their websites and we want to keep them open. But the people that are making the content, they're not the ones that are in control of the ads, and so the marketing department are the ones that tell the developers, hey, we need to put this ad code in this spot, and so they do it. And so the people that we're actually reading and the ones we want to support, they actually have no control whatsoever as far as what's going on that website. And so that's just sort of like, that's one of the things that I don't like. I wish the ads do need to get better, and I wish there was some way that, like, people could do stuff on the internet and still get paid for it and make a living, yet not be so terrible
You know, and honestly, this may sound weird, but I'm okay with a site using my CPU cycles while I'm there to mine a cryptocurrency, if that's one of the ways they want to make money. I mean, I have no problem with that, as long as when I leave, they stop.
I mean, if you're just sitting there reading something and your computer's not doing anything else, yeah, I mean, I don't have a problem with that either. But, I mean, for the people that are into that sort of stuff, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of taboo to talk about, but.
Okay, so tell me about what happened with Intel, and then we'll take a short break and talk about Audible some more.
Well, Intel has scooped up, in my opinion, one of the greatest engineers we have right now, Jim Keller. For those that don't know who Jim Keller is, he is the man that was responsible for the original Athlon 64 architecture, the K8. He's the gentleman that designed Hyper Transport. He designed x86-64, which is the 64-bit instruction set we use now that Intel actually licenses from AMD. He made the Apple A-series processors because he used to work for, what was that company they bought? Of course, I'll go blank, but whatever. He worked for a company that built ARM processors that Apple purchased and used their development teams to create the new A-series processors Apple uses. Jim Keller is responsible for those.
And I even saw on Twitter he was working at Tesla.
Yeah, that's where he was. That's where he left to go to Intel this time.
Okay.
But he came back after working for Apple designing A-series processors to come to AMD, and he made the Zen processor, so he's responsible for Ryzen. And another one that people don't talk about, he made K12, which was AMD's ARM processors. And then he goes to Tesla, designs artificial driving computers, and now Intel scooped him up to do something. We don't know yet, but I think Jim Keller's there to fix their manufacturing processes, which they are having huge difficulties with 10 nanometer. So I look to see in a year, we're going to have some really interesting Intel products because they have Jim Keller now, but they also have Raja Koduri from the Radeon Technologies Group. So they have AMD's two heavy hitters.
So do you think pulling in these two guys, do you think that would help drive the prices down from Intel to be a little bit more competitive with AMD if they can kind of fix the manufacturing process or something like that? Because it can't be, because they're buying enough in bulk to get the parts cheap enough. I mean, when you think about it that way. So, I mean, what really makes Intel stuff so much cheaper what makes AMD stuff so much cheaper than Intel's? Is it the manufacturing process?
It's the manufacturing process right now because AMD has, the way they manufacture their CPU dies is they can have bad batches and not lose money because they are making such small components on theirs where they take four of these CCXs is what AMD calls them, and they tie them together to make one processor, where Intel has to have that same amount of die space come out 100% perfect for theirs to work.
I got you.
So they just have a smarter manufacturing process.
Oh, well, maybe Jim Keller will fix that and we can get some lower cost MacBook Pros.
I'm a huge Jim Keller fan. I've been following him since the original Athlon 64 stuff. And yeah, I think he's going to do great things. He's one of those modern geniuses we have.
Yeah. So let's talk about Audible, and then I'll talk about something that I got this week, and we kind of mentioned it earlier. But yes, we are sponsored by Audible, and you can go once again to audibletrial.com/educatingtech, and you can get a free 30-day free trial, or get a 30-day free trial that comes with a free audiobook of your choice, and they have a catalog of over 180,000 titles. I'm sure there's probably more than that. That's kind of a good solid number to put in the copy we read, but I mean, I'm sure there's more than that by now. And the audiobook is yours to keep if you decide to cancel, but I don't think you will once you get started. I know that I am patiently waiting for May 10th for my next credit so that I can get me another book. Because I picked a short one this time, and I've been waiting for a little while, and it's kind of making me anxious. In fact, I was kind of thinking about just buying the next one that I wanted early and then probably finishing it in time for the third book that I want, and I can get that with my credit, but I don't know. I just hadn't done it yet. But yes, Audible, it's a great service. I like to listen to audiobooks when I'm driving, and maybe sometimes working around the house on some different things. I wish that I had some headphones that were loud enough that I could listen while I was cutting grass, because that would be another perfect time to do it. Or maybe I should just buy me an electric lawnmower and knock the noise down. Maybe it wouldn't
sound so
bad.
I had one of those. You don't want it.
I just worry about not being able to mow the whole yard with the battery without having to stop and charge it. That's the only thing I worry about. But we like to do, what we want to do is we also want to like share a couple of books that we like. We started this last episode. Chris went first last time, so I'm going to go first this time. Last time I picked Ready Player One by Ernest Cline, and so this week I'm going to pick Armada by Ernest Cline. And if you liked Ready Player One, if you liked the movie Ready Player One, I think you'll really like Armada too. It's another good story, kind of science fiction, video gamey, building moon bases. Just a real fun story. Ready Player One had a lot of 80s nostalgia and early 90s stuff in it that people our age really liked. And Armada kind of continues on that trend. In some ways, it's almost the same story, but it's different. But it's also a good read. I'll leave links to the show links in the show notes to my pick and Chris's pick. So, what weirdo book are you picking this time?
Well, a fitting way to pick it, because most of mine are probably going to be classified that way. But this is another one of those books that I couldn't stop until I was done reading. It's called 1 Second After by William Forston. I think that's how you say his name. But the book essentially starts out with an EMP attack on the United States, and everything just stops working. And then it goes through the trials of this one particular town in North Carolina that they have to face, and it makes you stop and think. And this is one of the few books I actually shed a tear in. So yeah, you will cry.
That sounds like that TV show that was on for a while too.
Jericho.
Yeah, Jericho. It was a cool show. I like it. And that also sounds like the pick that I'm going to pick next time too. So I can't wait to share that one. But you can get either of these titles or any other title from their extensive library for free with a 30-day free trial. Just visit audibletrial.com/educatingtech and get started today with your free trial and free audiobook. Our thanks to Audible for sponsoring our show. So, yes. Like I mentioned earlier, there are no more N23s unless you can get in at Southern Computer Warehouse and get a handful there. I know Amazon's running out because a lot of our donors choose projects. They're trying to get N23s from Amazon, and so I'm seeing HPs and Samsung show up. But we had to end up getting another cart. We purchased it. It's basically for next year's use, but I was able to get it out, and the teacher's actually using it now. But it looks like they are replacing the N23s with the 100E. And this Chromebook is probably, it reminds me a lot. In fact, it really does. My favorite Chromebook has always been the old 11E that was just basically just a rock. I mean, it was heavy. It was bulky. It was basically indestructible. I mean, it's probably like 7 or 8 years old by now, but I'm still using them, and I have not had probably, I have never had a key fall off of those. I don't think I've worked on any of those. I may have changed a screen one time that a kid broke. But, I mean, those things have been rock solid. And this 100E really reminds me of that model. Did you have any of those models?
I don't have any of the 11Es, but I have N23s, N22s, no N21s. But I'm looking forward to next year getting the 100Es.
Oh, they're so good. I mean, the one thing that you notice right off the bat is that it's using USB-C charging instead of the little Lenovo plug-in thing that seemed to change between the N21, N22, and N23. So it's just kind of weird that they would. But it's good that they're switching, because it's sort of going to be the industry standard thing. Mm-hmm. And you got a USB-C on both sides, and so I think you can charge it on both sides. I've only charged it on one. But I'm pretty sure you probably could.
I know the Asus that I carry around with USB-C on both sides, you can charge from either.
But, I mean, I'm going to leave a link to the show notes to kind of Lenovo's webpage about this thing. And, I mean, the one sentence that kind of really stood out to me, and it's like, it says, "And its mechanically anchored keys stay put and cannot be pulled off." That is like music to my ears.
I was about to say, the clouds parted, the sun shone through, and a choir started singing.
I mean, yeah, and we paid like $195 for it, and that's basically what we were paying for, a little bit more than what we were paying for the N23s, but pretty close. But it also comes with, like, I think 4 gigs of RAM in it instead of the 2 that I think the N23s had, I think. No, not that. It has the 4 gigs of RAM like the N23s, but it has double the storage. It comes with 32 gigs.
Oh, cool. Gigs. So it's 32 gig.
32 gigs instead of 16. So that's what it was. Because, you know, nobody should be buying 16 gig devices anymore.
I mean, no, and especially with Android apps now.
And so, I mean, it's just really rock solid. I mean, it really reminds me of that 11E model that I just really liked. And so, I mean, the keys feel like the N20 series keys as far as like how they feel. The 11E's felt a little bit different than these do, but I mean, it's just good. And another thing that they did, they took the handle away that was on the N20 series, on the spine,
the handle where you could hit other students with it.
Yes, and then the other thing that I really enjoyed that they took away, they took the spinning camera away.
Does it have one on both sides?
No, it just has the one camera on the front. But I mean, your people may use them more than we did as far as the camera, your students. But I spent more time fixing them than they did using them, as far as like fixing the cameras like breaking apart. I mean,
yeah,
I've been
very fortunate with that. It is not a good design. I will go ahead and say that. But I've only had one break.
I mean, I get why they would want a camera that can rotate to the back, because if they were wanting to be able to do things that like an iPad could do as far as like taking photos and doing things. But let's just be honest, nobody's taking pictures with these Chromebook cameras. I mean, it's a reason why it's a $195 laptop. It's good for like a video conferencing thing is essentially what I think it's good for, where you don't have to have like high definition video, but just like good enough video is kind of what I'm thinking.
But they are 720p at least.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not like you're going to get like HD video out of it, but, or good HD video. But it's a good device. It feels solid. I mean, I was fully expecting it to be N23s, and I opened up that box and said, this is different. I mean, it just even looks better. I mean, it just.
So you're going to try to pull one of the keys off for me?
No. Not doing that.
Please?
But I mean, it even said in the notes that like it could take like a 1.4 milliliter spill on it.
Nice.
I mean, that's pretty intense. It's like the trackpad and stuff is like sealed underneath it, so it can't get to the to the system board or whatever. And so, I mean, it's a nice Chromebook. I mean, it's pretty solid. Now,
yeah,
granted,
I'm excited to hear how your progress goes with them, because this will probably be the model that I get next year.
I mean, I had one that I had to send back for an RMA because, you know, when Chrome OS updated, they now started like checking for updates whenever you first set them up. But it seems like you know there's an update, but it just sort of skips it and doesn't do it anyway. At least that's what I've seen with the N23s. But these are the first ones that actually found the update and installed it, and so it took the setup. It took a little bit longer. Which was kind of a pain to deal with, especially when I was trying to get them done in a hurry. But I had one that after it did the update, it rebooted itself, and then it just fried out. It just didn't ever come back. And so I sent that one back. But and then I have another one here that I have to send in for repair, because the sound on it, it's like the speakers are jacked up somehow. It just, everything just sounds screechy. So I mean, but that's really it. I mean, so far it's like the class that I put them in, it was one of the more vocal classes as far as not liking some of the way the N23 worked, as far as like it would fall apart. I mean, depending on how hard you open it up, because of the plastic screw holders around for the hinges. I mean, I've got three of them on my shelf that I literally cannot fix because the places that hold the screws in, that hold the keyboard down, are literally shattered on the inside, and so there's nothing to screw down into.
If you don't want to order a base, which you can for $29, JB Weld Quick works really, really well.
Just super glue it, right?
Well, I mean, mix a little of that little compound up, splatter it down there, push that brass little screw thing back in there, and then you're good to go.
Yeah. That has been the more vocal class as far as like noticing the build quality not being as, I mean, let's call it what it is. I mean, it's a cheap laptop. I mean, it's what it is for the price. But
absolutely.
I mean, but there's a reason why we buy them, is because of the price. And we know what we're getting. We get what we pay for. We understand that. So I'm not complaining about that. But there are classes that I have this main class that they're a little bit more vocal about the build quality. And they love this one compared to the other one. And so I am super excited about this Chromebook. And I'm glad that moving forward, this is the one that we're going to get, at least for the foreseeable future. So.
Now, do they have that one in a touch model too?
I don't know for sure, but why wouldn't they? I mean,
it's true. Why wouldn't they?
I mean, it's just great. I mean, this is what CDWG told us was the replacement for the N23. So, and the N23 had a touch. So, I mean, one would assume that the 100E has touch too. So,
well, I'm excited to hear your progress with them.
Yeah. But yeah, but that, I mean, that can be our show this week. Just kind of wanted to touch, just wanted to make fun of Microsoft a little bit as far as their delay and then name change. and then share a little bit about
I think they should, if they want to, if they had a sense of humor, they would call it the late spring update.
Yeah, no kidding. But if they call it the April update and release it in May, I'm going to lose it because that's just too funny.
Oh, goodness, Microsoft.
But for links and show notes, visit educatingtech.net/33. If you want to send us some feedback, you can send it to educatingtech on Twitter, or you can send us an email at educatingtech@gmail.com. To find out more of what Chris is doing online, I know he's still making videos, as long as he's not pouring acid all over his hands. you can find him at Feeks on Twitter to see what he's up to. I know his pizza box computer is coming along pretty well. So, I mean, it's pretty neat how that's coming along. Can't wait to see
that
finished project.
About 35 pounds now, though.
I imagine so. I mean, when you build a computer out of wood, I mean,
true.
I mean, that's going to add significant. And it looks like you were using like 3/4 inch OSB board on it. So I mean,
it is actually
just
3/4 OSB.
So I mean, it's pretty crazy. So you can find out how he's hurting himself or what he's up to as far as building something by following him on Twitter at @feeks, and you can see what TV or movie I'm going to see it. And I'm at Twist of Matt on Twitter. So, but that's it. Next week will be our 1 year anniversary show. I know the numbers don't line up, but that's because we were off for a while for Hurricane Harvey stuff, and then we've had to take some weeks off here and there, just like last week. Just Chris was off work. That was his spring break, and the recording time just didn't work out for us, but it's all right. We took a break. I took a break, and I had some things come up that I had to take care of anyway. But it was good. But next week, I mentioned that we're going to do something different that I didn't ever tell Chris about that we were going to do this, but I'll go ahead and say it. We're going to kind of do like an origin story as far as like how we got into technology and just some of our favorite things that we like and maybe some things that we don't like, other than the fact that the keys on the N22 keyboards keep popping off. But that's kind of what we're going to do next week for our little 1 year, which will be episode 34 instead of 52, I guess. So I guess we could pull a Microsoft and just change the number.
I think we should.
Just skip ahead, right? 789.
And then all those other subscribers go. Where'd the rest of them go?
What happened? Did the feed break? No, we just skipped right on to 52. Call it a day. So, but that's it. We'll see you next week. See you later, Chris.
See you later, Matt.